and welcome to Ask the Mayor on WBAA. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Thanks for being with us on the show today. My guest is West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. If you'd like to get your question on the program today, you can call it in to 765-496-1999. You can go to your email device and ask at WBAA.org is the address there, or you can tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. Mr. Mayor, good to see you, and I guess we should say congratulations on your fourth election this week.
Yeah, this week.
Well, this week was the fourth time.
If I had to do that four times a week, Stan, I would be exhausted.
You'd get no sleep whatsoever.
And you know what? I think this is the first. I think this is the first time I've actually corrected you.
Oh, no. Well, I'm sure you've corrected me many a time.
Yeah, well,
quite a few mistakes on the hosting side of the show.
What a way to start. I know I'm going to pay for it later.
Yeah, well, the grammatical part of the show should be my purview, and I did not do as well, you're right, as I could have. Let's try to amend that by going to a couple of listener questions who have much better grammar than I do. Kevin says, the new roundabout at Lindbergh and Klondike Road is just an ugly mound of gravel with weeds starting to grow already. Normally, these are landscaped with flowers and grass, etc. Mm-hmm. Is there any plan to make this less of an eyesore, he says?
That is a terrific question. I can speak in generalities. I'm not sure if that's in the city. That might actually be in the county. But either way, the way that we usually handle, and I'm speaking specifically for West Lafayette, the way we usually handle those things is after construction, we usually have a dedication of what the theme of the roundabout's going to be. When you look at some of the roundabouts that we have in town, some of those green, we're looking at doing some ornamental decorations in the center of those things, in center of roundabouts. But insofar as just the basic hygiene, yeah, we always try to make sure that they're clean. We always try to make sure that the line of sight is such that you can see oncoming and exiting traffic, and that's more of a safety issue. But the one out there at Klondike, I'll have to go and give it a look, see. And if it's not ours, if it's ours, obviously we'll take care of it immediately. But if it's the kind of, I'll go ahead and make a phone call to the commissioners and let them know. But historically speaking, we're still relatively new to the roundabout business. And that's why it's imperative that when we do have roundabouts, that we try and make sure that they're as safe as possible. And that's not just the line of sight. When we first put the first one in out there at Jaeger, the big challenge that we had was folks just understanding how to navigate them. And so what we did is we actually took advantage of this amazing technological environment that we work in. We had some online tutorials on how to navigate a roundabout. And that actually went over really cool. People really enjoyed that. And I was thinking back, because I always told the story, and if I'm rambling, you can just go to the next question. But I always tell the story about how I first learned how to use a roundabout. And it was when I lived in Ireland. And what's the one thing that people do differently when driving in Ireland than they do here?
Drive on the other side of the road?
You are on fire today. Absolutely. They drive on the other side of the road. So here I am, a new guy, trying to figure out how to drive in Ireland.
So you're going to be going right around a roundabout there instead of left.
Yeah. And in Ireland, I mean, the car's about the size of your shoes because you got bigger feet than I do. And he's going the opposite direction. And there's a bunch of them. So I'm entering in on this roundabout. I have to figure out which way to go. I get in there, and then lo and behold, guess what they have in the middle of the roundabout?
What's that?
A traffic light. So welcome to Ireland, man. So you have to navigate the roundabout. There's traffic lights that stop you in the middle of the roundabout, which kind of is sort of like the exact opposite thing that you're supposed to
do. Would seem to defeat the roundabout.
Ding dong. That's exactly right. So then you get out and get off. So when we started putting them in over here, I said, okay, guys, no traffic lights, please.
So you've had a lot more roundabouts, of course, since the State Street project happened a couple of years ago. Have you been monitoring whether it's accidents that happen on or near those roundabouts or people's concerns or complaints that come into the city about that? Because obviously we still get questions fairly regularly when you're on this show that have to do with a roundabout in one way or another. Do you have any data to show that people are more understanding of how they work or that they are more comfortable with them? Because it seems like there is still some traffic, for lack of a better word, on our email that says, you know, I'm still not so sure about these things.
It's true. It's really true. It is a new concept that's been around for a very, 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 very long time. The roundabout navigation is not necessarily intuitive if you're used to going to the perpendicular or signalized intersections because you keep on moving. And there's the presumption of the rules of the road. Remember, did you go to driver's ed?
I did, for sure.
Remember the rules of the road, you know, courtesy and all this kind of stuff. There's the presumption that when two cars are coming close and they're getting close to one to go in the same direction, that somebody's going to say, okay, you go first. And that's one of the guiding principles of a roundabout. And the reason why there's that kind of jockeying and that kind of, you know, what is it called when ice skaters do that synchronized dancing thing, is because it keeps traffic flowing. And one of the main reasons, one of the main selling points or one of the main points of marketing roundabouts isn't necessarily about the volume of accidents that would occur, but it's the severity.
Well, it's also about the volume of traffic that can sure. move through an intersection sure. and there's fewer mm-hmm. people waiting at a red light for 30-second yeah. cycles and things yeah. like that. You see this particularly, I think, the you know, kind of quarter mile between Williams Street and River Road mm-hmm. and then State Street and River Road, mm-hmm. two very different intersections within eyesight yeah. of one another. But, I mean, are you tracking the numbers? Mm-hmm. And you know, for instance, the county every year puts out, here are the list of the 50 intersections that yeah. had the most crashes yep. at them. Have you been looking to see mm-hmm. how many roundabout intersections make that list, for instance?
Yeah, we actually don't look at how they rate insofar as a list, but anytime there's any traffic accident that occurs in the city of West Lafayette is documented. You know, all the police officers now have technology right there in their squad car, and they go ahead and put them in, and it goes into a database. So that's one of those retrievable facts. If somebody wants to know how they're doing and if they're safe or if they're working or whatever, we can go ahead and pull that data. And again, a lot of that has to do with, you know, which way should we be going as a population? Yeah, you know, we're all very familiar with the signalized intersections. And you look at a city like West Lafayette, where we've got about five or six different rush hours, and the density of population that we have, the roundabouts seem to be much more efficient when it comes to getting traffic flow continuously down long stretches of roadway. The challenge that we do have, though, is when you look at the age of our population, we've got that real big population base between 18 and 26, and then there's a gap, then it picks up again around 50 up to infinity. And those two demographics drive very differently. And when they're both on the roads together, that creates some challenges. It really does. But when you look at the drive times to and from work and the drive times later in the evening or earlier in the morning, again, it's a more senior age group that generally is out there. And a lot of times the traffic flow is a lot lighter and we have a lot fewer complaints with roundabouts.
Let's move to a question from Seth, who has one that relates to the colder temperatures we've been feeling lately. He writes, how is it that a city with a sizable population, a Big Ten university, and located near a Great Lake does not have an adequate indoor ice rink for hockey or other ice sports? He says, I know the answer is money, but has there ever been a push from figure skaters, hockey players, curlers, university club hockey members, etc., to get a rink in town?
Yes, 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 yes. We actually had, and it's been probably 5 or 6 years ago, we had a group, a developer and a hockey enthusiast that came to meet with me and then our director of development, Chandler Poole. And Chandler's an old hockey guy. He's from Wisconsin, and he understood how to use a stick and stay on your skates and slide a black thing around and all that kind of carry on. Me, never played hockey. Do you play hockey?
I do not.
Okay. I've never played hockey in my life. You know, I played football, which is kind of like hockey without skis and without the stick and everything. But either way, they came in and they pitched the idea of having a skating rink and like a community center all in one. And he said that they were pitching it that is where we have kind of a sports desert. We live in the Midwest. We have cold weather. People know how to ski. People know how to ice skate. Let's have a hockey rink. And we kind of did some unofficial, you know, research, and it just wasn't something that would foot. We would not be able to bring in the necessary numbers to accommodate an official, full-size, certified hockey rink. We actually, when we were building the skating rink, and this is just before I got elected as mayor, when they were doing the skating rink at Tapawinkle Park, they looked at different options insofar as the size of the rink. And again, those numbers just didn't really foot when it came to making it, you know, an official hockey rink size or just making it a recreational loop. And that's why they stuck with that. So long answer, But the short answer is it just doesn't seem like right here in this particular economic environment that it would be worth our investment.
So not something that you think is maybe even worth pursuing if you had another pitch come to you?
Well, I mean, we'll always look at it. You know, I mean, the good thing, bad thing about a hockey rink, if it's enclosed, and that's what was pitched, you know, a decade ago, if it's enclosed, it can be used for other things. It can be a convention center. It could be, you know, whatever. But it has to be in the right location, and it has to not be competing with some of the other venues that we have around here.
You mentioned the words convention center. Mitch mm-hmm. Daniels has talked about the possibility mm-hmm. of having an on-campus convention center, perhaps west of Purdue West, yeah. you know, around McCormick Road or something yeah. like that. I mean, I'm just throwing two things together that
yeah.
I've heard.
You know, and like I said, you know, I'm a pretty open-minded guy, but it always gets down to dollars and cents. And, you know, I could put a hoop up, you know, in the middle of nowhere, and before you know it, I'll have a game, you know. Running tracks are always very, very, very popular. You know, like our trail systems, very popular. People like to run. They like to ride bikes, all that kind of stuff. I've never really had a strong push for a hockey rink. And that's not to say that there's not a lot of people out there that would like one. It's just with all the other stuff that we have going on, it really hasn't been kind of thrown over on my plate.
On to another question. This one comes from Sheila, who says, I seem to remember you said on this program some months ago that the new entrance to the Payless supermarket in West Lafayette off of North Salisbury Street that is very bumpy would be looked at by the city. This has not changed, she says. Can you address this? It seems a safety issue to me since traffic has to slow down to enter, and this can cause traffic to back up.
Mm-hmm. Bumpy as in the surface?
I assume so, yes.
Yeah. We actually had, if you look, there's a certain portion of Cumberland and then a certain portion of Salisbury that has a material on it that obviously came out of another vehicle. It was either leaking or not a vehicle, a truck, a service truck. It was leaking or something. Our engineer's office has looked at that to see what we can do to smooth it out. And right now, the only thing we'd be able to do would be to grind it off and then resurface. And the way that roads work is there's always patching work that needs to be done and resurfacing work that needs to be done. So we just went ahead and put that into what we call our road diet. And I air quoted here, and I've always told you I didn't want to do that. So you can go ahead and fine me for this. But we put it into our road diet. And that way we can have a predictable operational plan and a predictable revenue stream towards those plans to do big stuff on roads. So we're aware of it, and we're going to go ahead and get it probably next year. When the season comes back in.
I was going to say, the season, I think, might be the important thing here. I was going to ask, do you have to wait until it gets warm again to do some of this work?
Yeah, I mean, it doesn't have to be like midsummer, but there has to be a little bit more predictability to the weather. If you have a hard freeze when you're doing some of those bituminous materials, it just kind of wrecks them.
Okay. Another question has come in from James, who wants to ask about a couple of different kind of interconnected things, the mm-hmm. brain drain issue and the West Lafayette downtown plan. He sent in a number of really interesting questions, and I'll forward this email to you because it's
Thanks.
A little more in-depth than we can get to on the show, but he's got mm-hmm. some really good questions. Basically, what he's asking here is, how is the downtown plan going to do a couple of things? One, incorporate young people, especially people at Purdue who are not just graduating but have time on campus here mm-hmm. to think about how they can affect the city while they are here. Mm-hmm. And also, how does the downtown plan work to do things like address the job, not the job shortage, but the qualified worker shortage that mm-hmm. we have in Indiana? Mayor Wazworski and I have talked about this a couple of times on recent programs with him, where this is a reason he says that his construction projects are more expensive than the city would like them to be, because there's just not enough of a qualified workforce mm-hmm. out there in Indiana. And this is true across many, many sectors of the state's economy.
So
what James is saying is, how can you take your downtown plan and a couple of the things that you're working on and make sure that it works to retain talent, mm-hmm. make sure that you have the talent that you need, and that you can properly kind of use the young people who are here and maybe get them to stay in greater numbers too?
Mm-hmm. We have struggled with that for a long time. Even back in my day when I was working over in Lafayette, you know, the challenges that we had in sustaining a tight job market and making sure that we have the right types of people working there is always based upon so many different things. And some of them are kind of trendy. You know, we talk about quality of life, we talk about safety, some of them are kind of trendy. And a lot of that has to do with the available positions that people might be interested in. Others are stuff that we want to bring, you know, college graduates, their families, their kids, you know, bring them to our community and help them not just work, but also contribute overall to our community. And we're really big on that in West Lafayette. But the challenges that we do have now is that because of the environment that we're working in, and not just here in Greater Lafayette, but around the country, unemployment is very low and qualified people are in high demand. We work very closely with Scott Walker and the Chamber of Commerce. Tony and I both go. We actually have three meetings a month about different things with the Chamber. And a lot of it has to do with job attraction and retention. People look at us and they see a high quality of life. People look at us and they see a very safe community. And when you talk about having a college towns are very attractive for young professionals because they know there's going to be entertainment options there. They're going to be, if you like sports and that kind of stuff, you always have sports that you can go to. The diversity of the population brings in a lot of different types of flavors into your community. And so it's very attractive. The challenge that we have right now is we are trying to craft positions with the State Street Project, with what's going on in the West End, and what we're trying to backfill on the East End. We're in the process right now of backfilling that and working very closely with Purdue to make sure that we can attract and or retain some of the graduates from Purdue. And the cool thing about that is, excuse me, is that when we're looking at our particular market, it's an international market. You know, a lot of the startups that we have out in the research park are based on an international flavor, which really does attract a lot of different things across the board to our community. The other thing is that when you look at a Big Ten university, when you look at a community that's got great schools, when you look at a community that's really safe, and you look at a community that's got the entertainment options that we have, that's very attractive. The one thing that we always end up getting challenged by is we cannot develop mountains and we cannot develop an ocean. That always is a big thing. And depending upon the age demographic that you're trying to attract, that becomes a big issue. And that's where we hope the quality of life and the cost of life here, the cost of living here, would be a great great draw.
This is Ask the Mayor on WBAA. We're talking today with West Lafayette Mayor John Dennis. You can call in your questions at 765-496-1999. Email ask@wbaa.org or tweet at WBAA News on Twitter. You announced yesterday that the renovated West Lafayette City Hall is going to be named for the late Mayor Sonia Marjoram. When you and I talked about this earlier in the week, you had indicated there might still be some paperwork to be done to make that happen. Has all of that been worked out?
Yeah, I mean, obviously we presented it at council last night. You know, Sonia is, and I've said this before, Sonia is West Lafayette. And for those of us that have been around her and around the city for a long time, you know, it's one of those things that it's a forehead slapping no-brainer. There has been absolutely no resistance. You know, before she passed, I asked Sonia if she was okay with it. And of course, she was very flattered and a little emotional. And she obviously approved, or else I wouldn't have done it. And then I spoke to her son, Eric, and the family was behind it as well. The big challenge is, you know, we're going into a building that has an existing name. You know, Morton School was a school to a lot of citizens in West Lafayette. I've not yet had any pushback. I've not yet had somebody say, hey, you know, you're taking away the name of my school. But we'll be sensitive to that. And so far as paperwork and everything goes, because we own the building, it's pretty much just up to us to go ahead and do it.
Any word on what the official new name of the building will be when you finally get around to that point?
No, I mean, it'll be one of two things. It'll either be, you know, Sonia Marjoram the City Hall, or Sonia Marjoram, you know, Municipal Center, something to that effect. You know, the important thing is making sure we get the name on it. And obviously that's the easy part.
Well, when do you plan to do that? Do you plan to do it before the reconstruction is done, or might this be an intermediate thing where as the construction crews are there and you would need to put up maybe a new facade or something that indicates the new name, would you do it in the midst of the construction or after the construction?
Probably after the construction, have a big dedication ceremony. The cool thing about it is because it's Morton School, there's a lot of brick, so there's a lot of space to put it on. excuse me. But, you know, it really isn't that hard to do. It's not like it requires a great deal of effort. When I read it, when I mentioned it to the council last night, I asked that they go ahead and just take that as sort of a verbal resolution and vote on it. And obviously it passed unanimously. So I think insofar as what we need to do, I think we've pretty much got that part covered. Now, the next thing will be, where do we put it on the building? How do we make sure that we respect the exterior of the building? Obviously, before we get done with the remodel at Morton, we're going to completely clean it up. And so the name Morton will still be very prominent. But there's a lot of bits and pieces that need to be done. You know, we don't know if we'll put it on the building or we'll just put a monument in front of it with Sonia's name on it. Lots of different things we can do.
What's the timeline on that project, especially since you had to switch contractors in midstream? Mm-hmm. How much has that delayed the anticipated opening / reoccupation by city government of that building?
Yeah, it really hasn't much. I mean, we're still looking at about a year. The cool thing about going
meaning
on the,
like end of 2020, early 2021-ish?
Yeah, yeah. Yeah, I have to remember what year we're in right now. So thanks for that, Stan. People, they don't know this, but Stan actually holds up cue cards for me so that I can remember where I am and what date it is. So, good guy, good guy. The one thing about when you do a remodel on an existing structure, and also Stan gives me a look when I'm saying something silly too, like he just did. When you're doing a remodel of an existing structure, it's complicated in some ways because you have obviously a finite amount of space to work in. And then there's a lot of things, particularly when it's an older building, you have to make sure are stable and secure. So it takes a little bit more time on the startup, but then once you get everything shelled out and you get the building braced up, it can move pretty quickly. And because we're looking at doing, you know, there's going to be a lot of open space there. It should be easily done within a year.
We haven't talked in a while about the Chauncey Hill Mall project either. We started 2019 thinking that all of the current tenants of Chauncey Hill Mall were going to have to be out by the end of this calendar year because the thing was going to be raised and all of the new construction that was talked about in that long series of public meetings in the middle of 2018 would get started. And then it seemed that there was some maybe miscommunication between the developers and the city about what was actually going to go there and what the developers wanted to go there to try and maximize the amount of money they could make on it. What's the latest on that project? Where are we? And is it possible that we might have to literally go back to the drawing board here?
No, I think the development plan is still going to be pretty close to the original proposition. You know, we're looking at having a lot of green space, some entertainment opportunities, some dining opportunities, and residential. You know, you look at a college community, those are always the big, people get their money quick when they do that kind of stuff. The challenge that we have right now has nothing to do with anything local government has any control over. It's just a matter of getting the owners. It's owned by two folks, or two different groups. And it's a matter of getting the owners to agree to sell and then to continue on with the development. And again, as local government, there's really nothing we can do about that except for make routine phone calls and say, are you ready yet?
So what is the timeline on that? I mean,
I don't have one. I mean, we thought we were going to be breaking ground on it this year, and obviously that didn't occur. You know, I think that both owners are motivated to get something going, but we're not involved in the negotiations, and we don't know what the holdup is right now.
Well, it seems like the property at this moment is kind of left in limbo. You've got it. It's about half occupied. Yeah. About half of the businesses have moved out. The other half kind of sticking around to just, I guess, to see how much longer they can make a buck on whatever time frame they have left. But that kind of uncertainty we hear from businesses all the time is the exact thing that they want to avoid.
Like, oh, yeah.
The business wants, first and foremost, certainty so that they can start planning.
Oh, yeah.
And that's the exact opposite of what all of these businesses have at the moment, right?
No, I agree. I agree. And we make that abundantly clear to the owners. And we feel, you know, with the amount of enthusiasm that we had about that project, and you talk about when people, we talk about that great gateway coming up State Street and beautiful buildings, the high rises that have been built, the way that it really looks like, you know, a substantial city now. That is the one thing that we're still holding, we're waiting to get done. And, you know, we have done everything that we can as local government to try and encourage this to move forward. But again, you know, we can't mandate it.
Let me ask you a couple of election-related questions here in our last 5 minutes or so. you have just been elected to a fourth term in office. Mayors McBarnes and Barton and Roswarski, who are on the show, have also won their races.
Now say what you said off the
air. I feel obliged to point out that since we've been doing this show, incumbent mayors are 8-for-8 in reelection bids.
Yeah, but, so you know what that means, don't you?
It means that I have a lot of power and I can ask you whatever I want.
Oh, yeah. Ooh, ow. Sting.
How about that?
Zap.
So I'm going to ask you to put the cart way before the horse here.
There we go.
Mayor Roswarski has already said he thinks after this term he'd like to go for one more.
Mm-hmm.
What about you? Last term? Another one after this? What's your current thought process? You kind of, when we were doing this conversation four years ago, you thought you were done.
Yeah.
And you flip-flopped.
Yeah, and you know, that's what elected folks do, is they flip-flop. You know, Bangin asked me the same question, and I said, ask me in 3.5 years. And I know you won't let me get away with that, right?
Probably not.
Yeah,
no.
He's nodding his head and he's
sure,
looking at
I'm
me
sure
with
I
those
will not
eyes,
let it
man.
Go that long, no.
You know, I love what I'm doing. I love being the mayor of my hometown. I mean, you've heard me say this ad infinitum. It's just the coolest job ever. And we've had so much good stuff happen. And we've had some challenges, too. I would like to obviously do this term, and I'd like to do another term.
You would like to do another term.
I believe so, yeah. But remember, that's 4 years from now, and we obviously I have a lot of people that I need to talk to about that. But, you know, it's when do you say job well done? You know, when do you, you know, high five and walk out the door? The support that we have had from the citizens that we serve has been phenomenal. We feel like we have been doing, you know, pretty much what people want us to do. You know, I've been in a leadership role since my second year on the police department over in Lafayette. If I weren't to do this, I don't know what else I would do, you know?
So let me ask you a general election question. If you do wind up yourself on a ballot again, that might be on either the voting machines that we have now or potentially on a new model.
They spell it right.
Well, that's the thing is I want to ask, what can city government do to, or do you feel it's even your responsibility to talk to the county clerk, Julie Rausch, or to the election board, who seem to be not moving with any deliberate speed about getting new voting machines, which everybody knew when Krista Coffey was not going to run for re-election last year. That was the big thing in the election between Vicky Wiestee and Julie Rausch, was voting machines. How do we get them? What will it cost? How quickly can we do it? Julie Rausch has pretty steadfastly said not until 2021 at the earliest, which means not for next year's presidential election, which is probably going to have significantly higher voter turnout than this week's election had.
I would expect that, yeah.
What should be imperative in your mind on the clerk's office or the election board in terms of getting those new machines?
Well, whether they're new or old, they just need to work. You know, I mean, that's the big thing. Again, I love being old enough to say I remember when. Did you ever vote with the cards?
Once or twice, but not here.
Yeah. Okay. Well, the cards were really cumbersome, and there was a lot of issues about security. So I guess the fast answer is, you know, whatever they do, they need to make sure that they work.
All right. Mr. Mayor, congratulations again on your reelection. And we look forward to talking to you next month and for years to come.
You know it, buddy.
This has been Ask the Mayor on WBAA. Remember to join us at this time next week for our conversation with Lafayette Mayor Tony Roswarski. Send your questions to ask@WBAA.org. I'm Stan Jastrzebski. Enjoy the rest of your day.
Support for WBAA comes from your membership and Encompass Credit Union, supporting Ask the Mayor and offering a full line of financial services to the people of Clinton and Tipton counties while supporting the communities they serve. More information at EncompassCU.org.